Send them this way. Okey-doke. So, we've got this sky map, like we talked about last time. And typically they are oriented so that north is up, but they don't have to be that way. But the relative order of the cardinal directions has to be the same. So typically this is going to be north and this is going to be south. And then kind of funnily, this is going to be east and that's going to be west. So it's the reversal of east-west that's kind of the important thing. Zenith is right in the center of this map. The meridian is the line in the sky that goes from north through the north celestial pole through zenith and back through south. So on this sort of map, it's going to look like that. The celestial equator runs the other way, goes from east, crosses the meridian at some point, and goes back to west. So kind of like that. North celestial pole, for us, it's about halfway between north and zenith, right about there. Show a path in the sky, which is part of a diurnal circle. So there are lots of such paths. An easy one is to use the celestial equator itself, right? Something that would rise in the east and set in the west. If it were further south, it would go kind of like that. If it were near the north celestial pole, it would make a circle like that. So any of those would be good. So then there's this question mark here. And the question is, how would that look in the sky? And the name of the game is to put the ground that is closest to that question mark down. Or kind of the more complicated story, take your pencil, put the eraser at zenith, put it over the constellation, and then orient it so that that pencil looks kind of like a telephone pole pointing towards zenith. So either way you figure it, if I can do it right, so I need to rotate it lots of degrees. Yeah, so it's going to look, I guess, kind of like that. Okay, questions? So I did a check before class, and you know, about five people hadn't done this quiz. So if this quiz doesn't look familiar to you, this is the one that's on these sort of sky maps. Right, it starts out kind of like that. Still have, I don't know, a few hours to do it before I get around to grading them. Questions on the quiz?
When will we be grading them?
Well, I don't know. When are you going to get it done by? What's the rest of your afternoon look like? Or you want me to put it off till tomorrow? Okay, so any time before 7 a.m. tomorrow is good. Yep.
It said that I took a quiz, and then it said I was done. Then do I have to take a graded one and two?
Oh, so you're talking about the click quizzes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so those aren't the graded quiz. This is the graded quiz.
Then I'm supposed to take a graded quiz after that.
Okay. Yep, so on like page 22 or something, there's something that says return to the main menu or take this graded quiz, and you want to take that graded quiz. So as long as you do it by 7 o'clock, it'll be great. Other questions? So lots of you did this celestial terms quiz. Which is fine, but as a matter of fact, I'm never gonna count that for a grade. So you can do that all you want. It'll be good practice for a quiz we'll do in class that'll be similar. But that was not what I wanted you to do for today. I wanted you to do this tutorial on sky maps. And kind of no surprise, you've got in front of you this star finder. So the plan is the same for next time, right? So, I don't know, 15 pages or something like that of the star finder that ends in a quiz. And you should also have, you might as well open up those Starfinder plastic bags if you haven't already. You should also find in there a little manual about how to use the Starfinder. You should read that. Yep?
The quiz that goes with the Starfinder, is that one graded, or is it like a click quiz again?
I don't think there are any click quizzes that are associated with the Starfinder. So all of these graded quizzes are like that one. So they're fill-in-the-blanks and multiple-choice sorts of things. And they're typically like 15 questions or something like that, all on one page. More questions? Okay, so we did lots of, we made a stab. Maybe we shouldn't say lots. We did made a stab at some vocabulary terms last time in the context of talking about these sky maps. So the ancients for sure, and it's really not bad to think about it that way even today, you can think about the stars as being all put at the same distance from the Earth. They're not at the same distance from the Earth. They're at radically different distances. But you can imagine them projected on the surface of a sphere and to think about that sphere as rotating around a fixed Earth. So the axis of rotation is going to have two poles on the celestial sphere. We've got a north celestial pole that will be visible in our hemisphere. It's up about 45 degrees above the north point. And if we were in the southern hemisphere, we would see a south celestial pole, which doesn't have a particularly bright star associated with it. So the imaginary surface on which we can think about all of the stars attached, that's the celestial sphere. And like any sphere, we can define an equator and a pole. So the equator is going to go from exactly on the east point of the horizon for us. It's going to go across. It's going to cross the meridian a little bit south of zenith, and it's going to hit the west point. Right? So on this sort of picture, if we turn this sphere upright, this would be the north celestial pole, and this would be the celestial equator. And we can't see these stars that are near the south celestial pole. They're below our horizon. We've got names for the cardinal directions as we go around the horizon. It's helpful to have names for the direction straight up, and maybe less usefully for the direction that's in the opposite direction. So the direction straight up is zenith. The direction straight down is nadir. Azimuth is this direction that you would be turning around an axis like this. So pointing at the various cardinal directions on the horizon, those are azimuthal angles. When we looked at our star maps, we saw that there was a tendency for the planets and the moon to line up with this, what was a dotted line in the sky, which was the ecliptic. So it turns out that the planets are, generally speaking, you can see here is a planet that's a little bit away from the ecliptic. Generally speaking, the planets are on this great circle in the sky that is the ecliptic. And the region around the ecliptic where the planets are always found is called the zodiac. It has lots of constellations that are zoo animals. So constellations, it's helpful to imagine the bright stars in regions of the space connected by lines. So those are the stick figures that represent the constellations. But remember, there's no spot between the constellations. The 100% of the star is part of one constellation. So presumably this star, even though it's not on any line, is part of this constellation of Ursa Major. Magnitude of stars, that's a measurement of how bright the stars are in the sky. The bigger the number, the dimmer the star. So you can see kind of magnitude 5 or magnitude 6 with your naked eye. And the brightest star in the sky is actually Sirius with a negative magnitude, something like minus 1.5. Questions about those terms from last time? Well, let's kind of fill in some of the blanks. It's helpful to have a name for big circles and small circles on the celestial sphere. So any circle that is smaller than the radius of the sphere, we call those small circles. And great circles are circles that have a radius that's as big as the sphere. Right, so we can have big circles, for example, that go, great circles that go from pole to pole. The equator is itself another great circle. The circles like you've been drawing in the sky for their diurnal circles, generally speaking, those are small circles, unless the star happens to be right on the celestial equator. Okay. So we got zenith, nadir, horizon, meridian, vertical circle. So if we're looking at a spot in the sky, it turns out maybe the most convenient way to talk about how to get there is to say how far you need to turn in azimuth and how far you need to look up. And when I say look up, I mean look straight up. That is to say, if this is the horizon, go right perpendicular to it. And if you do that, if you go straight up, of course, far enough, you're going to go through zenith. And if you go far enough the other way, you're going to re-hit the horizon on the other side. So these are examples of vertical circles. A vertical circle is a circle that goes perpendicular to the horizon, goes right through zenith, and if you go over backwards, will hit the other horizon, also at 90 degrees. So when we talk about finding a star in the sky, often we're going to say go to some azimuth and then go up some angle. The angle you go up is called the altitude of that star. So it's not like the altitude of a plane, which you could measure in feet. It's an angle that you're going to measure in, typically in degrees. Transit. So in the project we're going to work on today, transit is going to play a big role. If we think about it, generally speaking, things are going to rise in the east, and generally speaking, they're going to set in the west, and so they have to cross the meridian at some point. When they cross the meridian, they're going to be as high in the sky as they ever get, right? Of course, at the horizon, they start at zero altitude, and they're going to reach some maximum altitude when they cross the meridian, and then they're going to set again and have zero altitude. So the word transit is kind of reminding you that they're going across the meridian, right? So a star like this is transiting when it crosses the meridian. Another word for the same thing is to culminate. And that's kind of stressing that it has the biggest possible angle above the horizon when it transits. So culminate and transit mean exactly the same thing. They're just kind of pointing at different aspects. The transit is pointing at we're going past the meridian, and the culminate is pointing at that it has the highest altitude that it's ever going to have. Okay, so the transit time is kind of useful to know when you're going to look for a star in the sky, right? When it transits, probably when it's most prominent in the sky. And of course, you know, a few hours around there, it's going to be pretty much the same. Okay. So this was a precise map that was drawn by a computer. It's for exactly this point and for 9 p.m. on February 1st. Right? So this is 3 in the morning in England, but it's 9 p.m. here. So this is the setup of the sky at that time. We also had kind of a more general map, which you often see published. Like sometimes these are called monthly maps, which are kind of an average position for how the stars are going to be more or less during the month of, for example, January. And you can't have, of course, where the moon is going to be for a full month because the moon moves 360 degrees in a month. So we can't have the moon on this map, but the planets move, generally speaking, slower, so we can put a little dot for where they are. Notice that the positions of the stars are pretty much the same on the same month for different years. So here's the situation this year, 2012. Here's the situation 2 years ago in January. And you notice that the same stars are in the sky. Maybe I can even superimpose them. I don't know. Yeah, pretty much the same stars in the sky on any given month of a year, but the planets, of course, move around. So Jupiter is in our sky currently, but 2 years ago it wasn't in the sky. It was way over here. Okay, so monthly maps, kind of for an average position, more or less anywhere in the lower 48 states. Can't show things that depend a whole lot on time, and over here they often do give you some information about things that are happening kind of on a daily basis. But year to year in January, the stars are pretty much the same. So we can have, as we do in your textbook, stars for the month of January, and that textbook is valid for many, many years. Okay, questions about last time's star maps? So, this star map is perfect, but it has a couple of problems, right? It's for a time and a place, and it took a computer to draw it. This map here is pretty good kind of on average, but it can't get the details particularly correct. And it's also just for one time, Right? So in early January, it's for 8 p.m. For late January, it's for 7 p.m. It's just for one time as opposed to any old time that you might go out observing. What you've got in front of you is kind of a compromise between these various things. So we've got a map that turns like the sky does, and so we can set it for various times and dates. But because there are a huge number of stars that could be above the horizon, we're trying to map a bigger fraction of the celestial sphere on just one map. And you know, the bigger the map you make of a sphere, the more distortion you're going to have in that sphere. So kind of almost automatically, you can kind of see it by how things look extended here in the southern horizon. As you get far from the center of this map, which is this gourmet, then we're getting more and more distortion. And this map, like the monthly map, is something that is for basically the entire United States. It's an approximate map that isn't going to be precise for our particular location. How about the planets? The planets move around a little bit, so they can't have fixed dots on this surface. But if you flip this thing over, it gives you, for a sequence of dates, roughly speaking, what constellation the planets are going to be in. Okay, so we have a kind of a compromise sort of situation, more distortion. And why don't you set your thing for basically now at 10 p.m. So you do that, of course, by putting the date and time next to each other. So here we are, January 23rd. Here's midnight and here's 10 p.m. So I want to move right next to each other, January 23rd and 10 p.m. And if you do that, you should get a map that looks a little bit like this. Incidentally, kind of right off the bat, you might compare the shape of Canis Major in that map to the more precise shape of Canis Major in your SCO-01. So here you can, on your sky map. So here's a much better representation of how things are going to look in the sky. Because of the distortion we have by trying to map all the stars we can see over a year, that guy is distorted, recognizable, but distorted compared to the shape that's on your other map. So if you look at your map, you'll see that there is a nice white line corresponds to this black line, and that's the celestial equator again. But there's one thing that's maybe a surprise, and that is, I hope you would have guessed, that this is north, and this is south, and this is east, and this is west, just like it was on your sky maps. But there's distortion here. The outer edges of your map have to have been expanded, so instead of east being at the end of this oval, east has been moved at this spot here where the celestial equator hits the horizon. And if you look carefully, you'll see a little E there that indicates that east is not at the end of the oval. It's halfway up there. So again, sign of distortion, the distance between north and east is a lot less than the distance between east and south. And that's because all of the periphery of this circle have been had to been expanded out in order to put it on a flat piece of paper. Okay, there's a little dotted white line, which if you look carefully is labeled the ecliptic, and that's more or less where the planets would be found. So if we want to know where a planet is, we can go on the back side to see what constellation of the zodiac it's in. And that's not going to be a precise position, but we can then, if we see a bright star in the constellation that doesn't correspond to anyone on this map, that bright star is going to be one of those planets. This stippled region, that's the Milky Way, a whole bunch of dim stars all more or less in a line that actually goes 360 degrees around the celestial sphere. And we can see how this thing works over time. If we look at how the stars are at 10 p.m. and we want to see what the stars are going to be like at 11 p.m., all we have to do is rotate this map until the date is next to 11 p.m. And you can see that some things have set in the west and some things have risen in the east. And of course, some things are just going in a circle around the north celestial pole, which is the Gourmet. We can make a planet, we can make a star or a planet transit, of course, by putting it on the meridian, which is the line that goes from north through the north celestial pole through zenith and back through south. And we can read off then the transit times. Every star has to transit once a day because the whole celestial sphere is going to make one rotation. That transit may occur at night or it may occur during the day when it'll be hard to see. But, you know, right now I'm pointing at stars. We just can't see them, both because of the cloud cover and because the sun is illuminating the sky, so we can't see them through the sky. Okay, so the stars, moon, planets, they're all up 24 hours a day, but they may not be able to see them just because of the sun. Incidentally, the planet Venus, it turns out a good time to observe it through a telescope is during the day. We can see Venus just fine through the blue of the blue sky. It's bright enough to be picked out. Okay, questions about these guys. So let's take a look at how the planets seem to move according to the thing that's on the back. So if you look at, for example, well, let's start with Saturn. So on 2009, Saturn is in Virgo, and boy, it's in Virgo for a whole long time. Right? It's moving pretty slow. If we look at Jupiter, you can see that it starts in Capricorn, and then it moves on to Aquarius, then it moves on to Pisces, then to eventually to Aries and to Taurus currently. And if we are unsure about where Jupiter is currently, we can, of course, bring up our sky map. And what? That is in, better be in Aries currently. Is that what it says? January. Jupiter. Pisces. Okay. Yeah, I guess I can see that's Pisces still. This is the head of the fish that is Pisces. This is Taurus. Here's Aries.
In December 2012, are the planets supposed to align? So how would that look on like a star map? Like, how is that different from what they are right now?
Well,
Or in a moment.
So first of all, I'm sure that all of the planets aren't aligning in 2012. Okay. We could run it. We could run the computer and see what things look like in 2012. But what you're talking about is a conjunction. So if Saturn is moving slower than Jupiter, eventually Jupiter is going to catch up to Saturn and they'll be pretty much in the same direction as the sky. If they were exactly on the ecliptic, they'd be exactly at the same location. But usually planets are a little bit above or below the ecliptic. So we might reach a situation, you know, kind of like that, where we have two dots, two very bright dots that are close together in the sky. So that's a conjunction. If we had a conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn and Mars and Venus, then we'd have lots of bright dots that would be close together in the sky. It turns out that Venus can't be very far from the sun, basically because it's an inner planet. So if there was this sort of conjunction, it would be something you would pretty much only see at sunrise or sunset. So those are the planets, that along with Mercury, which is of course even closer to the sun, those are the classical planets that are particularly bright. Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, of course Pluto no longer counts, they're pretty dim objects. Uranus you can barely see with your naked eye, but Neptune and Pluto you can't see with your naked eye. So a conjunction is where we have lots of things more or less in the same direction on the ecliptic. And they do get to, I mean, there's no reason for there are cycles for these things, and it's kind of unlikely for all of those cycles to align, but it will happen eventually. And there was a much better alignment in the 1980s or something like that. And there was a lot of talk that this alignment of planets was going to pull the Earth in one direction. You might have noticed that nothing much happened in the 80s, so it didn't, nothing much to worry about. Incidentally, the opposite of a conjunction is an opposition, and that's where two things are in opposite directions. And usually one of the things that we care about is the sun. So if we have an opposition, we're talking about where a planet is in the opposite direction of as the sun. And Mars, I think, is pretty close to being in opposition now. And maybe the other thing that's worth commenting about, since we're talking about this, is you may hear that, you know, Mars is in Gemini, and that might mean something if you believe in horoscopes. And if things made sense, it would mean that Mars was in this constellation that we call Gemini, but things with horoscopes are screwed up, so it doesn't actually mean that. So, for example, my sun sign is Aries. So you would think that would mean that the sun was in Aries when I was born, but it wasn't. It would have been if the calculations that the Babylonians made, 2,000 years ago were true. So kind of Western horoscopes got disconnected from reality by the Dark Ages. And so they're based on calculations that no longer make any actual sense. So incidentally, if you get your horoscope done by somebody in India, they'll tell you have a different sun sign, and they'll give you a different prediction for today. And if I were going to believe any of them, I would believe the one that's being done in India, because at least the sun would actually be where they say it is, whereas it's not if you do a Western horoscope. And I hope it's perfectly clear that the position of the moon has nothing to do with whether you pass an exam or not. More questions? Okay, so the plan is pretty much the same as it was last time, and that is to get into groups of three and practice using this Starfinder on your own. So this is a three.
Yep. I have a question.
Yes.
What does Eve stand for? This is not one of these 13.
Oh, so the planets Mercury and Venus never get very far from the sun.
Okay.
And so the constellation they're in is often even hard to see, because usually the sun is still up or down. So that's saying whether you're seeing that those stars either in the evening or in the morning.
Okay.
So there should be some MORs in addition to some evenings. And Venus, currently, if you've looked for it, it's pretty prominent in the evening sky. So it better say evening, because that's where I saw it last night. Everyone got a project sheet?
Yep.